The Epstein files cover up, botched or calculated, from Al Jazeera's The Listening Post. This is a roughly 25-minute media analysis program that digs into how the latest Epstein document release was handled, why accountability remains absent in the United States, and what the crowdsourced investigation has uncovered that mainstream institutions have not. Section 1, The Document Dump. The program opens with staggering numbers, more than 3 million pages, 180,000 images, and 2,000 videos. This is the largest document release of its kind, and it was, by almost every measure, a disaster. The long-awaited tranche of Epstein files from the U.S. Department of Justice missed its own deadline. When it finally came out, it exposed victims' identities while redacting the names of some of the high-profile suspects involved. The Listening Post frames the central question bluntly. Is this the worst political cover-up the world has ever seen? Worst as in inept, as in amateur hour in the halls of American justice? One commentator, a veteran reporter, says probably not the worst, noting that governments lie like they breathe. But he calls it a botched cover-up because people are not buying it. Another analyst goes further, arguing it is not incompetence at all, but an entire strategy. The New York Times is cited as saying that even with 50 reporters reading 500 documents a day, it would take 4 months just to assess what is available, not even to analyze it. That gives you a sense of the scale of what was dumped on the public. Section 2, the DOJ as Trump's personal law firm. The program examines the role of Donald Trump's Attorney General, Pam Bondi, who oversees the Department of Justice. She appeared before a congressional committee and was confronted directly. A lawmaker told her she was running a massive Epstein cover-up right out of the Department of Justice, that she redacted the names of abusers, enablers, accomplices, and co-conspirators, while shockingly failing to redact many of the victims' names, which was exactly what Congress had ordered the DOJ to do. One commentator describes the DOJ as essentially Trump's personal law firm, which is not what the Department of Justice is supposed to be. It is supposed to represent the interests of the American people. Another delay tactic is highlighted. The DOJ was legally obligated to release all of the files more than 6 weeks ago. The program notes that Donald Trump's name reportedly comes up in the files hundreds of thousands of times. Epstein once called Trump his best friend. Kash Patel, Trump's hand-picked leader of the FBI and himself, a former conspiracy theorist who spent years in opposition demanding the files be released, did an about-face once in power. He claimed there was nothing there, no trafficking, just Epstein, no evidence he sent underage girls to anyone else. Section 3, what the files actually reveal. Emails pinging back and forth between Jeffrey Epstein and his alleged accomplices contain coded, sordid references to sex, girls, and even suggestions of torture. The files expose the details and scale of Epstein's network. It was cross-party, cross-border, intercontinental, involving politicians, billionaires, tech tycoons, royals, celebrities, academics, and journalists. And the network, even after Epstein became a convicted sex offender in 2008, just kept on growing. One analyst makes a critical point that is often overlooked. It is a calculated move to try and pin this entire syndicate on one man who is no longer living, Jeffrey Epstein, and his accomplice Ghislaine Maxwell, who is in prison. The idea is that because these two monsters are dealt with, the entire apparatus has been brought down. It has not. This is a syndicate that was global, run by the most powerful people around the world. It did not just disappear. The program also raises the issue of the missing videos. When the FBI raided Epstein's mansion in New York, he had a safe the size of a closet. There were many, many recordings. None of that has come to light. And the mantra of everyone named in the files is that they were ignorant of what Epstein was doing. Yet the email exchanges show they were very well aware. As one commentator notes, the nickname for his jet was the Lolita Express. Section 4. America versus Europe on accountability. The contrast between the American and European responses is stark. In Europe, major players in the UK and France have resigned over their links to Epstein. Heads have rolled in Norway and Slovakia. In the United States, the fallout ranges from the limited to the non-existent. The program draws a powerful comparison to Watergate. 50 years ago, Republicans were able to stand up to a Republican president. They went to the White House and told Nixon he had clearly committed crimes and had to go. And he did. Donald Trump is not on the verge of being impeached. His party backs every move he makes. No matter what scandal it is, they fall straight in line behind him. One commentator delivers a chilling assessment. The rot inside of this country is so incredibly deep that pedophilia is no longer a bipartisan issue. Whoever comes next will not be able to mend the deep fracture that has occurred. The United States has crossed a point where it will be incredibly difficult to undo the damage this administration has done to the systems of justice. Section 5. The crowdsourced investigation. Perhaps the most fascinating angle is the emergence of an informal patchwork coalition on the web. Lawyers, podcasters, activists, citizens of all kinds have been combing through the files, gathering evidence that news outlets are now capitalizing on. It is a far less elite, much more inclusive crowd with people from both the right and the left, even including some conspiracy theorists. The great irony, as one commentator puts it, is that the biggest pressure for all of this came from QAnon, the far-right conspiratorial network that said there was a cabal of powerful media and political people covering up for a pedophile network. Sadly, QAnon were kind of right about that bit. They just pointed in the wrong direction. They claimed it was the liberal left, and it actually turns out it was the MAGA right. A former New York Times journalist reflects on this, noting that as an honorary member of the elite who had close physical proximity to these circles, he understood how they operated. But most people do not get that close. Most people are not allowed into that inner sanctum. They are grasping in the dark, but their instincts have been right. Section 6, Iran's digital crackdown. The program shifts to Iran, where it has been a month since authorities imposed a total internet blackout during a violent crackdown on anti-government protesters. Connectivity remains an issue and reports are emerging of a renewed wave of repression targeting journalists and political figures. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that security forces have been raiding journalists' homes, seizing devices and IDs, and blocking bank accounts and SIM cards. One of the few ways for Iranians to bypass restrictions has been Starlink, Elon Musk's satellite internet network. But authorities appear to be using new methods to jam access to Starlink, with some experts suggesting Chinese hardware may be helping them do so. Section 7, The Super Bowl and American Militarism. The final major segment examines how the NFL and the U.S. military have built a mutually beneficial relationship that turns America's biggest sporting event into a recruitment and propaganda tool. The Super Bowl attracts over 100 million viewers and begins with a celebration of the military, from choreographed flyovers to flags stretching the length of the field. The program traces this relationship back to the 1960s, when President Nixon became the first sitting president to attend a game during mass protests against the Vietnam War. It highlights the paid patriotism scandal revealed by a 2015 Senate investigation, which found that nearly $7 million in taxpayer funds over 3 years were used to pay sports teams to stage displays of militarism. One commentator draws a provocative parallel. Americans bristle at large military displays in totalitarian regimes like North Korea and feel culturally offended by military parades in China. But NFL flyovers are the same exact thing. The difference is that organizations like the NFL have made that militarization culturally acceptable and comfortable. The program notes that ICE, the Immigration Enforcement Agency, was also present at this year's Super Bowl. Key takeaways. First, the Epstein Files release was either spectacularly incompetent or deliberately designed to overwhelm, with victims exposed while suspect names were protected. Second, the DOJ under Trump's attorney general has functionally become a tool for protecting the president rather than serving the public interest, and has broken the law by delaying the full release.